as time goes on. We're going to start with introductions. I'm Mike Ogren with Olson Engineering.
Greg Schaefer, Development Engineering Manager.
Nicole Snyder, representing Department of Environmental Services.
Don Hardy, Bojo Rebound.
Steve Bacon, Pressure Region Wastewater.
Andrew Gunther with PLS Engineering.
Eric Lima, State Engineering.
Jamie Housley, Jordan Marina.
Good morning.
Matt Herman with Department of Community Planning.
Les Swanson, Cook County Environmental Services.
And Marty.
And Marty.
Hello.
Who's very intrigued?
Just a reminder that the meetings are being recorded and will be placed on Duke's website following the meeting. If you have any cell phones, please turn them to silent or off, please. This time we'll review and adopt the minutes.
I have reviewed the minutes and move approval.
Second.
Moving to second. Any discussion? I'm seeing all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Any abstentions? All right. All right, Greg, you want to take us through the
sure.
upcoming events?
I guess tis the season, a little bit lighter board sessions and hearings for the month of December. Nonetheless, there is at least one hearing, Board of the County Commissioners hearing, on Tuesday morning, December 16th, 10 a.m., and as you see it here, it's a little bit more in narrative form, so I think I'll spare us reading that in its entirety, but basically affecting the Arterial Atlas Spit Plain Creek area, a proposal to amend the Arterial Atlas classification from rural to urban on the following: Northeast 88th Street, from Ward Road to Northeast 182nd Avenue. Towards the end of that, deals specifically with the master planning for rural, industrial, and land banks. In addition, staff proposes some minor changes to code section, dealing with changes in the comprehensive plan related to rural industrial development. Again, Tuesday the 16th, 10 a.m. No planning commission work sessions or hearings.
Thank you. Any team member announcements at this time?
I'm not a member, but an announcement that affects those who are members. I just want to give a heads up that we have a number of members whose terms are coming due in early part of the year in 2015. So again, just a notification on this, if our records are correct, that we keep on the county side. On March the 31st, terms expiring include Mike, Steve, Don and Jamie, and Andrew. So,
wow.
just an awareness there. The board would love to have you reapply for that if you care to, but also be aware that they do open that up to at-large, so it'll be a full notice, you know, invitation to any interested party to apply for those positions. So.
Except for Building Industry Association.
Yeah.
And I will be working with Jennifer in the board's office early in the year on this, so I think we'll start to send out notifications the month of January, a little earlier than in times past. So.
Okay. So you want those in pretty quickly if people are interested on the board to continue to submit? When would you like
to? I think my intent here was just an awareness that when that's posted, just to be prepared to reply to that. So.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Greg. Let's see, first thing on the second thing on the agenda will be the population growth, buildable land supply, presentation by Jean.
Oh, are we up?
You're up.
Okay, well, so what I went ahead and did is attached the buildable land stakeholder discussion report. This is really for your information, and I was just going to go through and highlight where the discussion went with stakeholder groups, and I think where things are headed, not only this legislative session, but for the future outside of the legislative meeting. Again, this was an outgrowth of a request from Senator Roach in a hearing that was held jointly with the Senate Government Operations and House Government Operations to try to address the issue of buildable lands in the state of Washington. The first sort of take a run at this was directly related to the buildable lands report itself and some concerns related from the private sector as to how the counties were going about developing their reports and the inconsistencies between all the jurisdictions on assumptions that they were using, and just a variety of different topics. And so what happened from that is the Department of Commerce convened this group that had representatives from King County, Snohomish County, Pierce County, FutureWise, Realtors, Building Industry Association of Washington, and Thurston County, and a couple other government stakeholders. And effectively, the discussion first started out with trying to develop some consistency between the counties and cities to make sure that there's greater transparency to the public in terms of what assumptions were going into the report and what would happen from that. The discussion, I think, sort of led to the conclusion that over, it's probably too late to impact this buildable lands report cycle, but on a going forward basis, the counties and cities will start generating a little bit more data, and in future cycles, hopefully, we'll get a little bit more consistency between the jurisdictions. The rest of the discussion sort of, I think, was wading into how do we, so we have all these lands that are brought into UGAs, for instance, and yet some of them, for a practical perspective, are limited because they don't have the infrastructure in order to serve them. And at least in the metro region in Seattle, one of the big frustrations there is that they brought in this land back in 1994, and so we've had 20 years of it, and yet it's still effectively undevelopable because of a lack of inventory, or lack of infrastructure. And so there was discussions about whether or not we needed to do some amendments to the buildable lands program to add in a sort of a funding element discussion, whether that would be needed as maybe a potential amendment to the Growth Management Act and the rules that follow within. And so that stuff is also going to go forward to the Senate. Beyond that, really the topics that were sort of, like I would say, additional discussions were also related to housing affordability. This was a big one for the private sector. And this mainly is, again, from the outgrowth of the fact that the way that the reports are geared, especially in some of the more urban counties, is they're trying to direct high-density growth into the cities, but the price per square foot, for instance, is outpacing the ability of the median average citizen in the state of Washington to afford that or have any housing choice. And so folks are moving farther and farther away in order to get the housing choice that they want, and that's actually having the reverse impact of what I think the Growth Management Act is supposed to do, which is try to keep housing and work sort of within reasonable commute distance. And so that discussion, I think, is on hold as far as this recommendation. It's something that's going to continue, I think, through the winter and fall next year. And I'm not really sure that we'll have many stakeholders there, but there may be some additional outgrowth that flows from that in terms of maybe some policy recommendations that can go forward to the Senate. So you have here again sort of the outline of the stakeholder report, and basically here just to answer any questions that came from that in terms of where things are headed, maybe at the state level.
So Jamie, just as a question, you were mentioning there's a desire for consistency. Are there some better examples in Puget Sound? I know they use the Puget Sound Regional Council uses a model. I'm not sure how well that model is tested, but are they more successful up there in some ways than what we have here?
No, I would actually argue that Clark County, to our credit, our model is actually pretty decent. I think we have some areas where it breaks down for instance, on the housing side, their market factor is much higher in most jurisdictions, and I think they allow, I mean, it, and it's, but it's crazy, it's across the board. They're the actual, like, the cities decide for themselves what their market factor is. Here we sort of have it set by the county, is the way we do it in our assumptions. And so that's why they're getting these wildly inconsistent numbers between the jurisdictions. And so you have some cities making this policy that we want housing growth, and so they've got like almost up to 30% market factor conditions, and then yet others have like zero. Some have, you know, 10%. The average, I think, really amongst the jurisdictions up there is about 25. They're probably a little bit more aggressive than we are. But again, they don't have any consistency across that. One of the other things that was really sort of enlightening, and this is something that I think all, you know, local government has experienced, is that we don't have, or you know, the state hasn't given a lot of funding to local government to go out and actually sort of ground truth a lot of the assumptions. So for instance, Snohomish County, actually, I think they had a grant through Commerce years ago and had gone out and actually conducted a live survey of properties that were, you know, potentially to redevelop or get more infill, and they had a pretty good statistical analysis to understand what that was in reality versus like a, it seems like in Clark County and other places, we just sort of picked an assumption out of the air, just that's what we've gone with. We're just assuming that, for instance, 25% of properties that are underutilized will redevelop. So Snohomish County actually tried to quantify that. I think that there's a large interest in the local governments up there, especially, and I think the private sector as well, is to maybe go out and fund those kinds of studies to actually see what is reality instead of just plugging in numbers. And one of the concerns that BIW and the realtors expressed is that, you know, King County, for instance, is making all these assumptions that you're going to aggregate all these parcels together and magically this 50, you know, 50-story tower is going to pop up when they're not recognizing the market limitations on actually doing assemblage and the cost associated with that. So I think, again, it's probably too late for this report to do that kind of stuff. So it's mostly gearing up for the next buildable land cycle, which I think is out another 7 years. So, any more questions? Interesting stuff.
If I may.
Yeah.
On the discussion summary here on the first page,
yep,
right in the middle, there's a sentence that says, but the group did not come to consensus on whether changes to the statute were necessary.
That is correct.
What changes were discussed, if that, if you recall? How significant is that sentence, you might say?
Well, I mean, you have people like me that are advocating for wholesale big changes, all of what Oregon has, which tries to quantify, it put more real market, real world data into the assumptions rather than just this is our dream.
Five stories here and
five stories here, five stories there. Now the experience, and I'll forward you guys this tomorrow when I get back to my office. The, you know, metros, despite what the requirements are in Oregon, they're still trying to push to a different policy than everything else. But that being said, a lot of us think that we need to get more mechanics into the act and into the RC or into the WACs to maybe provide some of that real-world data on housing costs and other items that should go into siting urban growth areas. And really, to us, that addresses one of the goals of the act, which is to provide for affordable housing in the state of Washington. A lot of us from the private side of the stakeholder committee think that goal has been ignored in trying to get to some other goals of the act.
So is that then, is the end result here then to to establish assumptions based on fact or some sort of something rather than just the culture or the thinking of those decision makers in those different jurisdictions?
Yeah, I think that the intent of this discussion initially was an outgrowth of we need to inform our policymakers of not only consistent data across all the jurisdictions, but also bring in what the real world data is. I think what Senator Roach is talking with her, this is all fine and good, and it's a good planning exercise, but she was really concerned about how much a house really does cost in a certain jurisdiction. That's what her constituents are most concerned about, and the data that's currently being collected, I think, isn't really getting to address that answer. So I think that's where some of this other stuff that we would like to see in the act would go towards.
Any other questions?
So, like I said, just stay tuned. I'll keep you in tune for what other discussions this gives us during the session and outside the session, because it's going to be an ongoing committee. But like I said, this was our task right now, was just to do this report.
Great. Thanks. Next thing, next item on the agenda is the TIP update.
As I introduced myself earlier, I'm Matt Herman, I'm with Community Planning. And I'll be talking about the Transportation Impact Fee Program update. As you guys are well aware, we've had a program that's been jointly administered by the City of Vancouver in the 90s. Earlier in 2014, the City of Vancouver chose to move forward and adopt their program specific to their jurisdiction. Therefore, it's on the heels of that Clark County is updating their Transportation Impact Fee Program Administration Scale. We have a consultant, DKS, underway. They also work on the City of Vancouver Program Update. I believe the City of Vancouver is, if they have not already, their option for that new program. In front of you is our schedule. It's very complicated. I'll try to demystify it as I go through here. As I mentioned, we're working with DKS. They are heading that up. Their sub-consultant will be doing the financial analysis is FC Group. Let's begin through the schedule. It's a quick schedule. Hopefully with a completion in July. The reason for the quick turnaround is because that joint program administration that we currently have with Vancouver, the termination of that is a six-month notification, so the goal is to have this program clearly defined and ready to go by the time of that notification. We have several different topics that we'll be studying with this update. They're noted as tasks that are bold on the left-hand column. The existing program, best practices throughout the state of Washington, advisory groups, I'll get back to this in a little bit, redefining the geographic boundaries of the TIP districts, the current credit system, and how that will be applied in the future, the business enhancement factor that we currently have in place will be task 7, and then 8 will be the financial calculation of the new TIP districts. Back to the advisory groups, there's two acronyms that you see there, the TAG, that's the technical advisory group, that's an internal group of multiple departments in Clark County. The SAG is the Stakeholder Advisory Group, and if you didn't receive it, we sent out a press release 2 weeks ago, and again on Monday, I contacted several of you to serve on that group. That's a group that we're hoping to have about 15 representatives external to the county that provides feedback on the process as we move forward. We've currently received 7 applications, including 2 that sit on DEEB today, Mr. Housley and Mr. Galimo. We've also received requests from Phil Watt Weiss, Randy Prince, Steve Borenstein, Sam Adams from your office, Don, and Chris Bremer from Tennyson Associates. So we are hoping to wrap up that group and have that penciled in by the end of this week.
That's the TAG?
That is the SAG.
The SAG.
Stakeholder Advisory. Okay. My apologies for the acronym. but they will be meeting about 4 times throughout this 6-month process to get feedback and provide direction. Our goal at the end of this is to have a program that's equitable to both the private and the public sectors while being defensible. As you can see, we do have a DEEB review coming on schedule for June 4th. You can ignore the times, I don't know why the times are put on there, but you have your regular schedule. So we will be providing feedback for you and getting your
Matt, does this correspond to the comp plan vision?
It is not tied into the comp plan. It is separate from the comp plan process.
Based on some forecasted needs that RTC is identifying? I'm just curious.
The current CFP in place will provide kind of the backbone to the TIF program, but based on the TIF districts and all the steps that we're taking.
So the CIP will be led by a concrete project.
So Matt, this is driven, this the impetus for this whole thing is the city of Vancouver pulled out of this joint arrangement?
Yes.
And that requires a review of this whole process.
Right. The reason why is because the joint program administration the current boundaries that we administer are in both the city and the county. Because the city has, and those districts then determine the rates, which determine the fees that we require. The separation from Vancouver from that changes that boundary. Therefore, the fees change, the districts change, the rates change. That's the
so from what you're saying, it sounds like the districts is really a good wheel. That if we're to prioritize, that's probably the one we're
doing. And what's one we have to do?
The way that it's defined, you go from the TIF districts, which define the rates, which define the fees and the business enhancement factors. So yeah, that's the first step in this process. The geographic boundaries.
Why did the city decide to go the other way, so to speak?
Simplicity. That's what they have been told. That was the
they think it's going to be cheaper for them, ultimately.
I can't speculate on what. The reason that they told us was simplicity.
And this applies to permanent growth boundaries for Vancouver.
Yeah, it implied we have our current TIF districts. We have 2 rural districts as well as 7 districts that are in the urban area, 5 of which are shared by the city.
So it's probably financial.
I'm just thinking there's benefits to, there's economies of scale, right?
Yeah.
And there's benefits to joint administration. There's more cost, it seems like, the smaller sectors you get or players, more players you get, everybody's got to have a lead, second to this and an engineer that. So it's, I guess it's somewhat disappointing just in principle.
And not to say that annexation is a topic of discussion, but is that at any point?
It is. It is between the county and the city as far as what happens upon annexation. Where do those districts go? We're working currently with the city to either formalize an interlocal or a MOU to talk about how that process occurs.
I know for a lot of our clients, the biggest issue here, depending on how districts are divided and how the rates are established and what the rates ultimately are, is the vesting of the existing TIFs on projects, and that I'm sure will be a hot topic of discussion in this and how that is maintained through there's some sort of, you know, at some point in time those projects that are approved under the old TIF program will essentially go away, but if we keep Jamie, have they been extending the past TIF rates? They haven't raised them for a while.
They have not for a few
5 years. 6 years? I think we've recommended holding off on any increases several times.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know if it's going to be a huge jump for one reason or another, that's going to be...
So the way that the city of Vancouver has designed their program is basically they have several maps in play. When your TIF excess credits were given, that's the district that applies, and that's the, you're basically vested in those.
Oh, okay.
So they've created like two more districts in Vancouver now, but if you have credits within existing districts, that's the districts you get to spend the money in. If you're doing new projects within the new five district area, which I don't think goes into effect until June, those credits would be allocated towards whatever district you would fall in at that point.
Okay. And then what about vesting? Do you know what they're doing as far as vesting?
They're honoring it.
Oh, they are honoring
it. That was one discussion that they weren't, but then a lot of us pushed back on it.
The idea is the credit system would still be in place, TIF credit.
And if you wish to, you know, I can come back to you as requested.
Absolutely. It looks like this is a pretty aggressive. your first meetings, the first tag and SAG meetings, aren't until it appears, well, next month, huh?
Yeah, that's quick.
And particularly in defining boundaries.
So that runs from the middle of January till March, middle of March.
So do you think
TM4 means a technical memo for? That's what TM stands for.
Okay. So would it be appropriate for you to come back in, say, February to give us an update as far as what's been taking place with regards to the both the tags and the SAGs and what, where this is all going?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I got it. Yep.
Okay, great.
So Matt, the stakeholders, is that everybody who would have a TIF credit? Are they automatically notified?
Those, we have done notification with the major TIF credit holders.
What about the minor?
I hope we're capturing them, and our goal is to...
It's real money
one of
these guys, right?
I'm sorry.
I mean, it's their money, sort of.
Yeah, it is. One of the difficulties that we're having, and I know the city is having, is they have $5,000 left on the books, $3,000 left on the books, and staff has changed, and they're not aware of that. Not staff, not Clark County staff from
I just want to be sure there is an effort being made to notify everybody who has a TIF credit.
Everyone that has a TIF credit will be notified.
Okay.
And will they have an opportunity to chime in? I know that they're not on the stakeholders group, but at some point in time, it might be good to have.
If they're not on the stakeholder advisor group, because we're trying to limit the number of how big that group is,
understand.
They will be invited both at Planning Commission and the County Council to provide input. As normal as a public meeting.
That seems a little near the end of the project.
What seems near the end of the project?
To give those TIP credit holders the opportunity to chime in on the. They get to speak here. This is what takes place up until that point. I would think so.
Probably would be a recommendation. I'm in agreement with Mike. Probably be a recommendation. I would think there might be one at that point.
I guess I would say our goal is not to limit their input. Mm-hmm. The more involvement that we have, the better program, but at the same time, we need to afford it.
No, I believe that's understood.
Well, of course, we need to move forward, but it needs to be viewed as a fair and equitable and open process, right?
I think that the input is going to be sought. I'm getting, and I think it's just, it's kind of woven in here, and there'll be a formal opportunity, I think is what Matt's saying. But
I think it's pretty easy to solve it, in a sense, at least from how I'm thinking, Matt. A public notice. Up in here, we're going to have a meeting.
Sure.
Please come and give your testimony.
Sure.
And then it's included in the whole process, and nobody really has a beef that they weren't heard.
Sure.
And until the end of the process where everything's kind of laid out and decisions have already been made, recommendations made to PC and the board.
Wait, yeah.
I'm on your side on this thing. There's going to be a lot of people will. I think there's some emotion attached to it because it's real money.
Definitely. Yeah, that's definitely understood.
Yeah. This is,
sensitive. Okay. All right.
Okay. Any other questions? Great. Thanks for coming by, Matt. Appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you back in February.
All right.
Thank you. We are way ahead of schedule. So we'll move on to number four here on the infrastructure percentage deduction. Eric, you are?
Yes. It's probably going to be fairly quick. Just an update. I think we're kind of waiting on if staff is going to respond formally to our letter we submitted. Ours is in the record. Mm-hmm. But just through some research, I did find out at least a portion of how the original 28% came about. And in the last comp plan before 2000, it was 38%. And the city of Vancouver made a request to the county and analyzed a few areas within the city of Vancouver to come up with the 28%. But one thing I wanted to note is, that's not representative of the new area that is being added now. So I don't know that we need to make any real change, but that's where that 28% came from. And there was a letter that the commissioners are relying on right now, and it was prepared in 2014. And it used examples for infrastructure percentage. But looking through that list, most of those were to the old code. A lot of them were in areas that infiltrate well. Some of them had regional facilities, and they again are not representative of the area we're bringing into the urban road. So I would say our findings and our recommendations still stands. And I'm not sure. I think it's in staff's court right now to address this letter and to give us some recommendation of what they think is a reasonable number for the infrastructure percentage. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think, where we're at, but I don't know.
You haven't heard back from anybody?
No.
Wanting more information or further discussion or?
No, we haven't really. I mean, there hasn't been any new hearings. I think it'll come out at the public testimony for when they're adopting the plan.
Right.
But I'd hate to see it come up really late in the process, and then all these other assumptions, that all these other findings come from that assumption, have to be redone at the end. So I guess I encourage staff to look at that letter and address a more reasonable instruction.
I might suggest just keeping it in front of them constantly, reminding them of that.
Who is that staff?
Probably Oliver.
Yeah, it's long range planning.
Can you remind them as a board?
Yeah, not
remind them, ask them. We are awaiting your response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, why don't we, I mean, maybe make a motion to resubmit our letter to Oliver and request a formal response.
Okay, a motion on the table. Any discussion?
Just one quick thing. I want to echo the percentage. One of the things that did come up in the population growth, the land report discussion here was a window into how the jurisdictions treat infrastructure. And again, it's more consistent with what Eric's or our deep letter sort of indicated it is. So.
Is there a possibility of getting, do we have anything that we could augment our letter with that
indicates that? I've got the stuff I can get it in here, and we can maybe augment the letter.
That'd be good. That at least lends further support for our position on that.
And I think that there's value in that infrastructure reduction piece being correct. I'm just not sure if there's a way to change. I think the county's adopted the formula for moving forward. So I'm just, with that in mind, I totally agree it's valuable, but I'm not sure if the expectation should be that there's going to be a change, because I think they've already made that call.
But it's a policy.
Kind of made that call before it actually was released to the public without any real feedback from anyone. That's what it's going to be. But with new information and data, and it's going to be appropriate. I think it should be considered. And that's basically what we said in our letter, so we're not changing our stance. It's going to bring it back in front of them so they can respond to it. They might come back and they said it's too late. We're going to use the one we just decided to use, even though it might be based on outdated information. But I think they need to say something of why they're using it the rate they are.
Mm-hmm.
And right now they're hanging on this letter, which wasn't actually intended for that.
Can I see that letter?
Yes.
And this might also...
separate letters. This is the one from the city of Vancouver. This is the one from the county using with 28%. And here's our letter.
The other thing I'd like to point out, and I've thought about this a lot lately just because it recently came up in a hearing out at Ridgefield, was that when the county, this isn't really say anything bad against GIS, but when they're applying the model to actually see what's built on the ground, say, for instance, in Ridgefield, Ridgefield is in a phase two community, so they're not technically regulated by any municipal stormwater permit. They're not required to come up to standard, and I think the engineers in the room would shake their head yes, but the minute that they hit 10,000 people, which isn't too far away from now, they will be a regulated community, and those soils, based on the map that ASCE prepared, shows that it's an area that doesn't infiltrate very well, and so I think the observed versus the future infrastructure in that vicinity is going to not match. So I would just caution, again, long-range planning, if we're predicating, trying to accommodate growth in these areas that don't have regulations, regulations are coming and they will have to comply.
And if nothing else, and if nothing comes of this now, it certainly sets a precedent for the next go-around.
Well, I think there's other things to be added to the list that you talked about, Jamie. In terms of that next round, and hopefully there'll be more funding for that stuff too.
Yeah.
We have a motion and a second on the table. Any other discussion? Yeah, absolutely.
So the letter that is being relied upon for the current deduction or adjustment was authored by an individual that, if I understand correctly, has asserted it wasn't meant for that use.
It wasn't. They've used it for it, but that's not their
primary. Would that individual confirm that? And would that be somehow, can we circle back around with the author and gain additional leverage, you might say, or additional impact?
Yeah.
By some kind of affirmation or confirmation. And that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's really like sounds a little bit awkwardly, but. Yeah. Marty, would you clean that up, please?
Not my responsibility.
Okay, absolutely. Any more discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Any abstentions? All right, Nicole, did you get that?
I did.
Okay, very good. Anything else?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
We set the mood for you guys.
How excited. You're up.
So thank you and you and the group for letting me jump onto this agenda.
Absolutely.
So late. So I'm gonna spend 10-15 minutes of time here kind of walking through 3 years of an effort we've been working on to replace Tidemark. So, you know, looking at these devices, right?
Yeah.
What did these look like 15 years ago?
Brick.
Brick.
You gotta get right devices to them. So we're working on, you know, replacing a 15-year-old legacy system that the owner has been threatening us that they would no longer support and maintain the system. They don't like holding on to 15-year-old systems. And we pay this company about $90,000 a year for maintenance and support. Eventually, we won't have that luxury and it'll fall on our own IT shop, which we rely on tremendously as it is. So the vendor that we're contracting with, we have contracts in front of the board next week, is a company called Computronics. They're out of Lakewood, Colorado, and Edmonton, Alberta. We spent from August, we spent since June on a scoping session when they came here for an on-site demo. And really we spent extensive time in August and September on this statement of work and scoping session, which is one of the documents that are before the board. So we have these process flows that are out of the box that Computronics brings to us, and then seven new workflows, which are our land use review, engineering, environmental, and final. There might be some that I'm not quite exact on. With any of these solutions, the out-of-the-box solution isn't going to marry up with our commercial and industrial site plan review process that we visited a couple weeks ago. So we have to configure the system, and we have 42 kind of business lines that we're going to be configuring. We looked at a couple different conversion approaches from Tidemark to the new system, whether we do what's called Big Bang, kind of all at once, or a phased approach, and you kind of come up with a hybrid. And we have, with a new system, we'll have 17 interfaces, meaning Tidemark currently has an interface with Oracle for financial management systems, but it's a one-way communication. All these interfaces are going to be two-way. So we'll have the ability to get real-time data rather than doing batch data reports overnight. So the interfaces are going to be a huge improvement. Just a high level, very high level, project timeline on this, assuming the board approves the contract next Tuesday. We're going to kick off toward the latter part of February. Phase one, which will have all of the functionality of the new system, and we'll be turning about 80% of it on. That's phase one. It's about an 18-month duration. When we get Computronics here, we spend 3 days with them actually going over the detailed schedule. That end date may kind of have a little bit of wiggle room, especially if we've been working 18 months and we've got training in the middle of building season. So that's gonna, that's already one thing that I've already been told is something we need to look at more carefully. And I'll go over these phase two and phase three. But it is a, you know, it's a, you know, 25, you know, 30 month. So it's a while we're going to be working on this. And every system takes a couple years at a minimum. Phase one, we'll have mobile applications for all existing users. We'll have all case types for permits. We'll have a teller system for online and internal use for cashiering existing critical reports and forms. We'll have a citizen portal initially to work on our public utility permits, licensing, and then inspections through our IVR. Our custom configuration and interfaces will all be completed. And then Tidemark will be shut off on a Friday. And then Computronics, this, let's say, called Posse, is their actual software brand, will be up and running on a Monday. Phase two, the citizen portal, will open that up to residential for single family. We'll be looking at the mechanical, plumbing, engineering, and commercial signs. And we'll kind of look at some selected contractors and engineering firms as kind of piloting. Mobile application for new users. We'll go to electronic plan review for selected users and customers. And then we have non-critical forms and reports. Our electronic plan review is a third party. We've had a couple, two or three different solutions. There's Bluebeam and Project Docs, and with Computronics and their software, they kind of partner more with Bluebeam, and that's the vendor we're going with. Electronic plan review will be opened up for everyone. The citizen portal will be opened up for everyone, and the remaining reports and forms are part of phase three. So some of the things we've built into executing this contract and moving forward on implementation is we'll hold back 10% of the cost of the contract until everything is signed off, and you'll see the budget coming up here shortly. But it's $250,000 or thereabouts. We have milestone based payments rather than lump sum and more not based on certain milestones. There's a 90-day reliability testing period after each phase, so we want to make sure that phase one, we have 3 months of operation without major errors or defects. We will have a certificate of acceptance before we make payments, and then we've used this is we're buying a new vehicle, we're buying a new car. That's the analogy. But if we don't attend to some of the driving habits of a new car, we're going to have some problems still. So I'm going to be leading the effort with Carol Brown, who is our business technology manager I hired in July, to kind of go through this change management plan. So we'll be looking at procedures, we'll be looking at communication, we'll be looking at training, and we'll be looking at accountability. We have to work with staff and the management team on making sure that that we're not just getting a new system, that we're actually going to be doing some things slightly differently. So the cost, the total cost, the very bottom is $4.7 million. We actually, I was looking at an earlier financial quarterly report that the auditor had, and we earlier pegged this at about $4.5 million. And actually, it's $4.7 million, so we're pretty close. Two major subtotal costs. One is to the vendor with 5 years of maintenance and support. It's about $3.6 million. And then the other cost component is with the county project staff that has been working on this project staff through the implementation, which is primarily a project manager from IT, a business/management analyst, and then a report writer. We have a contingency, about 12% contingency, and then third-party contracts with our IVR and electronic plan review. So those are the overall costs of the project. You'll see that the contract with Computronics, the master contract, is $2.4 million. And the major cost components of that implementation are in what's called fit gap analysis for 28 business days. The configuration of our base product is nearly $500,000. The custom configurations, the interfaces, and the data conversion. We have a hosting agreement, which I think there's a slide coming up. This will be hosted in the cloud. It's not going to be hosted on site at the county. One of the things that we looked at was self-hosted or hosted on site. So those are the costs. I'll get to some other pieces here. The budget that I have in front of the board with a staff report is we have expended some money this current biennium largely through an IT project manager and the staff that we've had working on this. So the general fund has that actually they set aside or assigned, they call it, they assigned about $1 million to the general fund, and the way it worked out, it was about 25% of the cost. So nearly $1.2 million of the general fund has been dedicated to pay for a portion of the system. The other is in non-general fund funds. We can actually query the system today, and about 69% of the use of the system is in building and development. 25% of the use of the system is in general fund programs or general public inquiries. 5% is in development engineering, and then 1% is in stormwater and water program. So the budget allocation is broken down by the percentage of the use of the system. And I know we're going to be talking about something else, but I've got some information to share with you when we get to that point. The hosted versus vendor, self-hosted versus vendor hosted. For a five-year period, you know, it was going to be, you know, $150,000 cheaper for the vendor to host this than it would be for the county. The county DBA time stands for database administrator. If we needed to tap into any DBA time, it was going to be much more expensive than the vendor hosted. So there's going to be a hosting service level agreement. That's the last document that the board has in front of it with its binder of the main master contract has, I think, 10 or 11 exhibits, and then there's this hosting agreement. Certainly, we you know we're gearing this to have certain project benefits, improved customer service, so you'll have an ability to view status of projects, schedule inspections, get inspection results, apply for permits, register a complaint, make payments via online portal. We'll be able to issue certain permits online. And again, we're going to be phasing this into three phases. Unlike TIMARC today, which does not have any business intelligence or built-in workflows, this will have automated workflows and electronic checklists, standardizing processes and increasing accountability. There's some really cool dashboards that are part of the system, where I can have a dashboard built on, say, for example, the fee waiver program, and it's real-time data. That was one of the coolest things when they had the demo. The dashboards were really, really fantastic, and the search and reporting engine within this new system is really dynamic. We will be moving toward the electronic plan review. And that's been one Greg can chime in. That's, you would think that more and more people and larger agencies would be embracing electronic plan review, but it just doesn't happen. So it's good for us to be more patient and kind of phase this out over time. We had a couple people negotiating the contracts, and once they were through the negotiations, Chris Horn from the prosecutor's office and myself were looking at some things. So there's a master contract, there's a hosting contract, and then there are licensing agreements and service level agreements. So we've spent a lot of time on these contracts. We will have, for the first time, for technology or for software contracts, key performance indicators and penalties associated with non-performance, so to speak. So we have certain key performance indicators on response time, resolution time, and quality. We have a standard of 99-10, so that's something that we have in our contract, that if they don't meet some of these, they will credit our annual maintenance and support agreement. So it's actually on a monthly basis, so they would credit our monthly maintenance and support agreement. So that's something that they're confident that they're not going to miss any of these, to the point where they're going to put their money where their mouth is. And KPI tickets is an issue that, you know, an issue or a defect is, and we have different severity levels in the contract. There's critical, there's high, and there's medium. And I think those three are the three that are most, they're going to be most closely measured. And critical tickets have to be opened and resolved within a certain period of time. And if it pops up again, it's got to be resolved. And so there's some strict, there's some very specific language in the contract about that. We had a steering committee through the process. Steering committee was the county administrator, the finance director, department directors in community development, public works, environmental services, and application services. For the project moving forward, Computronics has two project managers. We'll have our own IT project manager. We'll have a business owner, which is our business technology manager, Carol. I'm the project sponsor. I have been the project sponsor throughout this particular effort. And one of the things we'll be doing is through the implementation of this, when we're configuring the system and writing reports and procedures around how it's built and then testing it, we're going to have a business review committee to make sure that our business needs are being met. So folks from environmental services, public works, and community development are going to be involved, probably at a manager level or higher. Last thing is, I mentioned from the outset, is assuming the board approves the contracts next Tuesday, we'll be working with Computronics through a little bit of December and January, but our project kickoff is in late February. One of the things that I wanted to be sure of is relative to funding, I'll go back up to it, is we've had, since about 2010, this comes from the auditor's office and actually the general ledger. This is actually on our website too. Since about 2010, we've been accruing a fund balance overall. And in January of 13, when the 13-14 budget was adopted, January of 13, we had roughly a $3 million fund balance, uncommitted fund balance. We said that we needed to set aside some money for this project, and it was $2.5 million at that time. And through the first 6-7 months of 13, prior to the current fee waiver resolution, it's an important distinction, we accrued another $1.6 million in fund balance. So it was about $4.6 million as of July 2013. Arguably, all projects coming in the door, residential and commercial, were paying fees. We had the program that had 8 or 10 projects that were large. They had to have 10 employees, 15 employees. So we weren't seeing many of those. So I kind of marked July of 2013 with roughly a $4.6 million fund balance, and we committed 2.5 of it to Tidemark. We've actually had this committed since the budget adoption of 2013-14. We had a couple, it has been reported, and kind of digging into the details more, we've had a couple months where expenses exceeded revenues, and we did remodel the permit center. We got hit initially in December with a contract with a fellow from who did the work, demolition work, and the additional work. And then again, in April of this year, we had to pay for all the furniture, the carpet, the surfaces, all of that stuff. So as to allay any idea that not all building and development types is going to be paying for the new system, there's actually our fund balance up until July of 13, and all projects were contributing to the fund balance in the form of paying their fees. So.
So the money's there?
The money is there, yes. So today, and this is something that you can find on the county's website, the community development homepage, we have a little more than $1 million of a fund balance that's, quote, uncommitted. But we still have roughly $2.2 million of committed fund balance. That's to review plans that you submit tomorrow. That's for us to do the inspections on projects today for the next 6 months. So we have to have that money to pay for those future obligations. So I'm very excited about getting this contract executed, and this firm, Comptronics, they've been stellar working with. They've been very, very responsive. We've really kind of built a partnership early on. I had the opportunity to go visit Douglas County, Colorado, which was an agency that they're providing the service to, and I was really impressed with how they're working with that county and how well the system is working for them. So everybody is excited about getting this moving.
Same system there in Douglas County?
Yes.
How long has it been going there, Marty?
They've had it for a few years, and they've built it up over time. Like they had maybe some planning first, and then they brought on a building. And at the time, they had just been kind of turning on for contractors in the mechanical, HVAC, plumbing. They just kind of started turning that on, and they started seeing more and more permit applications for that kind of work just through their online portal. And that means, you know, for Greg Roofing, they don't have to come into town and wait in the lobby in the permit center. I mean, they can apply online and pay online and get a permit online. So those are the benefits that, you know, they're coming. It's just it's not going to happen overnight. Yes.
So I'm confused on your funding. Are you saying that the funding's there, and so that you're not proposing or foreseeing any fee increases?
That's correct.
For this? Okay.
That's correct.
So rather than give us a refund for your surplus.
I believe the city of Vancouver funded their replacement with fund balances.
No, it needs to be done. I'm glad to hear that we have the budget for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we have the fund balances we put this up, I think, maybe a couple months ago to track the overall fund balance, and it's just not that we have to have money to pay for a new system, for example. We have to have fund balance to pay for the obligations that we have for reviewing plans and making inspections. So sure. That's the what we call work in progress, and it's roughly a six-month expense number, and then there's this what Mark Gassaway and others, it's the uncommitted fund balance. So
well, your phone analogy, that's what you would call it. That's a good lead in.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, that's the
we have a very the system we have today is it's a dog.
So Marty, the time mark's 15 years old, you said?
Yes.
Is there an anticipated life cycle for this particular one?
So we have the contract is for 5 years with a 2 year optional addition, and that's 7 years of this system with this version, mm-hmm. right? They do minor releases every 12 to 18 months, so some maybe small enhancement or upgrade, but at about every 7 years, mm-hmm. 8 years, a system will have like a major upgrade. And then at that point, we have to decide, do we go with an upgrade or do we stay with what we've got? Tidemark was an upgrade from Sierra Systems, and we've never done anything since. If we went with the same vendor, which is a company called Acela, they have now what's called automation, Acela Automation. It's still the same company, it's just a whole different device, if you will. So, I can't stand my iPhone because I get these iOS updates every 3 weeks. That's a little too much, right?
You can't get away from Apple.
Yeah, you got to get away from Apple. Anyway, the team that has been working on this is excited. I've given the Board of County Commissioners a high-level look at this. They've had the documents since last Monday. I'm going to give a short presentation to the board on Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock. And hopefully they'll be hunky-dory with it, and we'll get it approved.
Are there any other jurisdictions in the region that are using this? Or
Vancouver, B.C. is one of their other clients.
The other
Vancouver, yeah. Douglas County was this county south of Denver. I think some of the Denver metro areas, cities may be using it because their U.S. headquarters is at Lakewood, Colorado. Dallas, city of Dallas, Texas is using some of it. So a lot of they're headquartered in Edmonton, Alberta, so they probably have a number of Canadian clients. So anyway. Greg, do you have anything? You've kind of been involved in a bit.
We're good. I would say, I guess, from our vantage point, it really has been a great process, as then it's kind of brought us to the table to really scrub our processes, how to get efficient. Kathy's been outstanding, as a project manager in this. And so I think it's had, multiple benefits to really try to streamline, what we do, get more efficient.
So the last points, because Greg touched on it a little bit, this is actually in response to a second RFP that we released. The first RFP, we had two vendors that we just spent a lot of time with, and we came to the conclusion that they were not going to meet our needs. One was an incremental improvement over what we have, and one was a good improvement, but their references on project management, implementation, and maintenance and support were really sketchy. They're out there trying to get more and more clients, and then the more and more clients they get, the less and less they have to spend maintenance and support on their existing client base. The other thing is, in the time that we've spent on this, we've had tremendous opportunities to clean up the data we have in our current system. And we've gone through, I haven't done a squat, but the staff has done, mountains of work in cleaning up data. So a lot of things, we're going to be more prepared than a lot of their clients. This company said, you guys are really prepared, and you're poised for fewer bumps in the road and great success. So I attribute that to all the staff work that's been behind the scenes. So.
What did the city go with?
They went with Hanson. Hanson is a system that they had with their utilities and engineering. And the Hanson said, hey, we have a community development building module, if you will. So they went with Hanson.
And how'd that work for them? How do you hear it?
I need to talk to Chad. Loris was the community development director at the time, and she retired, and Chad took over. I think they had some interruptions through their implementation. And I think they've had maybe a small bump here and there post go live. They're not using electronic plan review outward facing.
They are going to be implementing that though, but they're behind the times. So from what I've heard from staff there, they said it's way better than Tidemark. But yeah. That's about it.
Yeah.
And they have to have somebody there constantly to override this or fix that. You have to have the expert in one person there rather than everybody knowing how to do everything or authorized to do everything.
So there are two things that I've been consistently preaching, and that is this will not be, we will not fail on the lack of training or the lack of resources that we provide in implementation. So when we get to that point, we have training for all users. We're budgeting for a decent amount of training, and then there are super users who will be really kind of certified, if you will, to use the system more adeptly, and will have admin rights that others won't. But I won't have this fail because we're not spending the money on training. That's one of the things I heard on a site visit with the previous RFP is, people were like, yeah, we spent a couple days in training. Well, that's not good enough. That's simply not good enough. And then implementation, you have to have the resources available. As an example, if I have somebody from building inspection and I need them, I can't have Jim say, well, they're too busy on inspection. They need to be in with the system configuring it, and then Jim has to backfill on the inspection side, right? So that's one of the budget pieces is backfill. That's the county's responsibility to make sure that if I've got some people missing from the permit center or building or engineering, that resources are available to backfill.
Question. Sorry, thank you.
Do you expect much? I think Rooster's been pretty supportive so far in the process, and they don't expect any fireworks at the hearing or the.
Yes, they've been very supportive. Hosting was a point of interest with Commissioner Bedard. He was very interested in having it vendor hosting, and the analysis shows that it's more affordable, and it's probably going to be more reliable. One of the backup. One of the backups hosting is like a Microsoft product cloud, Microsoft in the cloud. It's like, well, not a small company to rely on. I forget the name of it, but I'm sure we're not going to have any problems.
Phase two, implementation, electronic plan review. I think I understood this correctly. You said there's a third-party component to the electronic plan review.
Yeah.
I think that means vendor, not
third-party
vendor, not reviewer, not staff.
Right. Right. No. Third-party vendor. It's Computronics and this software called Posse. It's the workflow and the business process. So you'll come into that system, and it will route plans to the appropriate staff. And then when that plan is opened up, it opens up in what's called Bluebeam. And Bluebeam is an electronic plan review markup tool that, has version control, and you can look at red lines, side by side, overlays, things like that. You can look at building only, fire, whatever. So we've seen a demo from Bluebeam, and it's the workflow is Posse,
but the actual electronic plan review and the markup solution is this third-party vendor called Bluebeam.
So for general public, assuming that it's going to simplify financial or maybe more up-to-date, I mean, just
right.
real-time reports for all sorts of different departments, and with that then saves, I'm assuming will save some costs,
yeah.
you know, regardless of man hours related to reviewing information. And one of the things that general public also looks at too is the, you know, we have our Clark County website, JAS site. How, or is that going to substantially just wholesale change? Is it going to just work with what's there and have small tweaks, or?
So the.
Just some thing in general public and how yeah. they're going to.
One of the interfaces is with GIS. So all the property data. So you could query the system as a citizen on a project down the street, and it's going to pull in all the property information from GIS. The portal, you could be it could be used really in a couple different ways. One is as you know you're a citizen, you want to register a complaint, or you want to you want to make an inquiry on a project that you know is down the street. And again, that has that ability. The other is if you're a contractor, you're going to basically establish an account. You know, you have a login and a password, and you can apply for things online. You can request inspections online. This is, you know, at the end of phase two or phase three. One of the cool things that this that the demo showed was through the portal, you can see where you're at in the process. It's kind of like a little mini. Work. It's like a mini flowchart where you're at.
Oh,
yeah. And the fact that the interfaces are two-way. The mobile inspection piece, for example, if somebody is in the field and they approve and you know a certain step in the inspection and they approve it with a mobile device, it'll send the contractor something electronically, like oh. that. I don't know if that happens now, but. With this system, it will. With smartphone or tablet or whatever. So, it's exciting times.
Yeah.
Marty, a little bit off topic. Are you prepared to present to DEEB yet in the meeting process?
No.
Okay.
But you know, we wanted to have that before we get moving on this.
So absolutely. No. That was completely understood, yeah. and that was made clear.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. Very good.
Anyway. Thank you, Marty.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
I'll bring the lights back up.
I will.
Yeah, we're starting to fall asleep.
It works.
Don't set the mood.
Next item on the agenda is going to be the fee holiday audit and discussion.
Well, I think the right setting. Please preset one. There it is.
Yes.
Where'd my mic?
Well, as I stated last month, wanted to bring up the discussion in regards to the fee holiday. And this is out of predominant some concerns that our members, CIA's members, have expressed to me in relation to the effectiveness of the program, number one, and what the real or perceived notion that residential construction is subsidizing not only the program but community development at this point. And I think that those two concerns are sort of highlighted by some evidence. Back in late October, I believe it was the 25th, the commissioners were in a work session in regards to the budget on stuff, and one of the topics that came up was the fee waiver program, and about minute 45 in that presentation, a question was asked directly by the board, and that was whether or not the residential development is subsidizing the program, and the answer that they got was yes. This was again highlighted in the report that came from the auditor's office, which again was independent.
I believe it's page 9 that says the cost of the program are currently supported by fees paid by residential, multifamily residential, government, and construction ineligible for waivers. I think that the additional data shows in the county right now, as of, I think this is pretty current live data, there's been 799 single family permits issued this year for a total construction value of $287 million. The non-residential side has 353 permits for a total construction value of $63 million. There's 169 applications that have been fee waived in the pipeline, but only 48 of those have gone to occupancy. So we can extrapolate that, as it was recently reported, I think this last week in the Columbian, thus far in 2014, the county's seen an increase in about 7,300 jobs. I doubt that those 7,300 jobs have come from those 48 developments. And so, again, the concern from the building industry was something that we raised here at this body at the inception of the program, is that we want to make sure that residential isn't unfairly being targeted or supporting this program, and I have to say that evidence suggests that it is. So I'm not really sure what to do with that other than bring that to the board's attention here, and I don't know whether it's in our purview to make recommendations to try to change the program to address some of that.
Well, our position is, I mean, we talked about this a month or two ago, and we talked about our original position, that it was not any unanimous support of the original fee waiver program, and that even though we voted in support, we were very reserved about that support, and we had a laundry list of probably half a dozen items that were at the top of the list that we not only presented in writing to the commissioners but also testified at the hearing before it was approved. I don't know, and I can't remember what the decision was at that point in time, a month or two ago, whether we reiterate that or if there's anything that we need to do further. It might be a BIA standalone issue that might need to be taken up from that avenue rather than D. I think our position was pretty clear. I don't know if it's changed much or if, but we're not responding to something that's imminent or that's going to be, it's already happened. Now what we're doing is responding to the results of that. And basically the way I see it is that, you know, we haven't, there hasn't been a metric by which to gauge the success or the failure of the project until this audit has come out. We were concerned about residential multifamily bearing the burden of that. So I think our position is pretty clear. I don't know how everybody else, how the board feels about that. And there are some people that weren't here at that time.
May I comment?
Absolutely.
If I understood it correctly, please correct me if I'm wrong on this, the general fund was going to backfill and make whole the community development budget to the extent that the fees were waived.
That's what the resolution says.
Okay.
Has that happened now?
And let me see the year. At the end of 2012, where's that? I had a number written down there. At the end of 2012, so for the little bit of 10 and 2011, the general fund did transfer about $385,000 to the building fund. That was to pay for the earlier programs. 2012 had the limited program for about until June, July of 13. The general fund budget has not transferred money into the building and development fund? One answer is that you have a fund balance. Why would we pad your fund balance? So that's a policy, and that's a decision with a budget department.